Welcome to The Upper Hand, where Chuck and Chris talk hand surgery.
We are two hand surgeons at Washington University in St. Louis, here to talk about all aspects of hand surgery from technical to personal.
We want to thank you for subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And please leave a review. That certainly helps us get the word out.
Oh, hey, Chris.
Hey, Chuck. How are you?
As usual, I'm doing great. It's podcast time.
It is podcast time. We are ready to go.
I think we're going to jump right into a clinical topic, aren't we? We are so excited.
I've got one for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
So we have a hand surgeon who happens to be a full professor. He's kind of at the age where, you know, the hairline's a little bit further back, but he's got this pain in his elbow. And he thinks, you know, he thought it was from operating too much. But when he goes to pick up stuff out of the fridge, it just hurts. And he just has to stretch it out to make it feel better.
Wait, so is this not the really good looking younger hand surgeon that we've been talking about?
No, I think they know each other though.
Well, I'm sure this one must be dashing as well. So interesting. So lateral elbow pain in a middle-aged patient.
I didn't say middle-aged. I just said somebody who was a full professor.
So yeah, I mean, it's obviously, I think all of us see this patient. And to me, in all seriousness, I mean, I think it's the 40 to, 60-year-old patient that I probably see complaining of lateral elbow pain. Is your experience has been?
Yeah, the age is a pertinent positive here. And I know other people have started to describe this condition as being some, you know, almost like the acne of the 40s and 50s.
That's one thing I say is that, you know, almost all of us are going to get it at some point. It's just a matter of when and how bad it is. When a patient comes in and, you know, usually the chief complaint is shared by my nurse, you know, pain on the outside of the elbow. And I'm like, all right, well, here we go. Tennis elbow. And, you know, how do you refine it quickly when you go in the room? You know, we don't need to ask the 30-minute history here, but what points do you look for?
I think the duration, certainly the demographics, like we discussed, the duration of symptoms, the onset, just making sure it's not a traumatic type event. Because if there is trauma involved, then I tend to shift my gears a little bit in terms of what I pursue. But if it's, you know, no incipient trauma and perhaps some overuse involved, that kind of thing, and then just asking like what provokes it. One thing I learned from you is this kind of segues into the exam a bit. But you know, what makes it feel better? And then you kind of show them the hurts so good kind of stretch. And that typically is a big indicator that it is indeed tennis elbow.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. It's pretty rare that I have a patient come in and say, this happened after I was painting a fence. But certainly that could be a helpful indicator if a patient does have a similar history like that.
Yeah, I was using some yard tools recently, and I get it. I understand.
Well, stop doing that.
Exactly.
So what, if you could simplify, so we have a patient, all signs point to tennis elbow, but because you're an outstanding clinician, you want to confirm that diagnosis on clinical exam. So what do you look for on your clinical exam to really hone in on that diagnosis?
You know, like, fortunately for hand surgery, a lot of things are subcutaneous, and I think it is point tenderness on the physical examination. Starting at the lateral epicondyle and just marching my way distal to there and really being over the mobile wad and seeing if that's the area of maximal tenderness. Now, the diagnosis that we'll talk about, you know, that comes with this, whether you believe in it or not, is radial tunnel syndrome. And to me, that condition has tenderness that is close by, but in the adjacent zip code. So it, for me, that is tenderness that is further distal as you get closer to the radial tunnel proper and kind of in the supinator region. But if it's real close to the lateral epicondyle, I'm thinking more tennis elbow. You know, just because I focus on nerve, I try not to bite on the radial tunnel too much. Because for both of these conditions, a lot of patients will get better on their own or with conservative management.
Yeah, I like what you said. And I would say this, when someone comes in with lateral elbow pain, I have three areas that I worry about. One is the tennis elbow area, which is really lateral epicondyle. Two is the joint. And when I say joint, I do include the ligament with those patients. But again, usually with the ligament, there's a major trauma but joint line tenderness in the gutter. And then three is the radial tunnel. And so our job, my job, your job, is to distinguish between those three.
So in 2020, what is your understanding of the pathophysiology of tennis elbow?
My understanding of the pathophysiology is I still believe in the concept of a tendinosis or degeneration of the ECRB origin. I don't really think about it as an inflammatory condition. I do think about it as a degenerative condition that people my age get. Is that how you conceive of it?
Yeah, you know, I do think of it that way, you know, but still I also use anti-inflammatories, I'll be honest with you, as part of my treatment algorithm, because I think it tends to make people feel better. And while there is, it is largely a degenerative, enthesopathic type condition, I think there is an inflammatory component to some of the symptoms. And if there is any concurrent radial tunnel, some of that anti-inflammatory may help as well.
So tell me about, sorry, I'm going to circle back a little bit, I apologize. Tell me about the key physical exam maneuvers you use to, one, confirm a presumed diagnosis of tennis elbow, and two, make sure you don't have the kind of elbow joint issues or the radial tunnel, or maybe you have both, but what are the key exam maneuvers you use?
So for me, for the tennis elbow, it is point tenderness over the lateral epicondyle and just distal to it over the mobile wad. So then I have the patient hold their elbow extended, and then I have them passively flex their wrist down in pronation, and then I'll have them passively flex their wrist down. And that is the kind of, ooh, it hurts so good kind of stretch. It's uncomfortable, but they know that it is helping them feel better. And I just call that the tennis elbow stretch position. And if that makes them get that classic feeling, then it helps me confirm the diagnosis. As part of my assessment, I'm passively ranging the elbow while having a finger on or my thumb on the joint line and feeling for crepitus and sensing if the patient has any discomfort with passive elbow motion. That helps me solicit whether there is any sort of intra-articular kind of pathology. Ligamentous instability, I'm typically testing with the chair rise, that kind of thing, but I only do that in the setting of an actual trauma. And I'll be honest, you know, those patients with true ligament issues don't often make their way into my office unless it's an acute injury, because we have so many other people like you and some of our shoulder elbow partners that see more of the chronic elbow issues. And then for radial tunnel, it's just continuing to march distally. And one thing that I like to do is basically start distal and then march your way into the radial tunnel so that you start at that distal edge of the supinator. So that's palpating with the forearm pronated and starting along the radial shaft in its mid portion, and then working your way along that seam between the basically the ECRL and the EDC, and using that to palpate the distal aspect of the supinator, which is an underappreciated source of compression. Most of the times it is the leading edge of the supinator, but that is such a deep structure to try to palpate that I think pushing on the distal aspect of the supinator is a higher yield exam. That being said, radial tunnel syndrome in my practice is still a diagnosis of exclusion. And I think that it oftentimes will get better as the tennis elbow symptoms get better, or if I'm really pursuing it, there is a role of a diagnostic injection for me. How do you approach, looking at those three different conditions on your exam?
Yeah, pretty similarly. I guess I would say my go-to test for tennis elbow, aside from palpation, is the handshake test. I do it with the elbow extended and flexed. And I really wish I understood why some people have pain with the elbow extended and some people have pain with the elbow flexed. There has to be something, and maybe one of our listeners can enlighten me if you can't. But the shaking hands test is really a good one for tennis elbow.
If they have pain with shaking hands while elbow extended, is that positive for tennis elbow or vice versa?
Yes, I think of it as tennis elbow, just like grip strength is usually more affected on the affected side. You know, it's decreased on the affected side compared to the contralateral side with the elbow extended. I would like to say, oh gosh, if this elbow extended, maybe there's a component of radial tunnel, but I don't think that's true.
So if their elbow is flexed and they have pain, what does that mean?
I don't know, but it doesn't, patients are inconsistent in their response to that test, which has always intrigued me. So we don't have all the answers on the upper hand, but we try to sort them out. So I use the grip test. I use the stretching as you described. I'm one who believes that, you know, radial tunnel pain is sort of like pain over the scaphoid. If I push hard enough over your radial nerve, it's going to hurt. And so I use the contralateral side for comparison. You probably do a more careful exam based on what you just described than I do, but I usually, there's one pretty consistent spot for that leading edge that I try to assess. And the other thing I would say is elbow extended resisted supination and the middle finger extension test. I don't have great faith in either of those, but I do both of those tests.
Yeah, I did the middle finger extension test. I don't know if I put a lot of stock in it, to be honest with you. It doesn't really steer you one way or the other. I've seen that described for both tennis elbow and for radial tunnel. I don't put a lot of stock in it. I do it. And the other thing that I'll do on my assessment is I'll also palpate over the first dorsal compartment and the intersection region, just because it's so close by and it's easy to exclude those other issues just because of the referral pattern of pain in the radial tunnel can mimic those conditions. And I'll do a gentle tunnels over the superficial radial nerve. Again, that's mainly because of the bias in my practice.
No, that's fair. That's fair. You alluded to earlier an injection, but let's talk about all diagnostic testing. So what's the role for MRI, and patients frequently request it, nerve studies, and diagnostic injections? How do you think about each of those? And we can go back and forth.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start with the MRI since that's the first thing you listed. I typically will not get that study. Patients walk in with it, and like you said, they insist on it, but it doesn't really help me. And I'll be honest with you, I don't do a lot of primary tennis elbow surgery. I think I honestly have done one in my practice, and I've been in practice, I guess now, next month, it'll be 5 years. So that's just not the way that I was trained and the way that I've evolved. So I'm not getting MRIs. I get that, you know, there are probably people in practice who see surgery as having more of a role in their treatment armamentarium, and an MRI might be helpful either because it informs what they do or because insurance companies may ask for it. What do you think about MRIs?
Yeah, complete waste. I do not order MRIs unless there's something weird about the exam, about the story, about the ligament. That would be the only reason I would order an MRI, and it is super rare. So I am in complete agreement that it has almost no role in my practice when I have a presumptive diagnosis of tennis elbow.
Will you go to the operating room if it comes to that without an MRI?
For sure. Yeah. Yes. MRI has no role in my practice whatsoever.
And how about nerve studies? Is there a role for that in this tennis elbow radial tunnel type patient?
I have always subscribed to the teaching that a negative nerve study means nothing and a positive nerve study could help you. But because the rate of the negative nerve study is so high, I don't order nerve studies for this. And I'm not a big believer, honestly, in the diagnostic injection, although I understand its role for some. So I don't use a lot of diagnostic injections. I'd love to hear exactly how you do it and how you conceive of it just for my own education, but it's not been a big part of my practice. I go on the clinical diagnosis of radial tunnel based on pain when I choose to treat it.
So I agree with you on the nerve studies. You know, I think that, you know, enough of the nerve is, you know, this is a different kind of condition than carpal tunnel and cubital tunnel. The nerve is functioning quite well and is functioning well enough to fool any nerve study because of the way that nerve studies are done. There's enough of the highly myelinated and faster running fibers to have the latencies and the velocities look just fine. And you're rarely going to see any true denervation outside of an actual nerve injury. So I don't typically get the studies. Although if patients come in with it, I'll talk with them about it. For me, the diagnostic injection is, you know, so I don't do one for lateral epicondylitis, but I will do it for radial tunnel. And a lot of that is just so I can counsel the patient on what to expect if we were to go to a decompression. It helps me confirm the component of their symptoms that are related to the radial tunnel as opposed to the lateral epicondylitis. Now, a decompression is not going to make them completely numb, but it will give them some confidence that, yeah, let's add this extra part of the procedure. And a radial tunnel decompression does add some morbidity and recovery to a tennis elbow surgery. The other diagnostic injection I would consider doing if I am going to the operating room for this, is to do a separate diagnostic injection to denervate the cutaneous branch coming off of the radial nerve proper that runs over the lateral epicondyle. That's something that Dellen has described in detail. And I do that because if I'm going to the operating room for tennis elbow, I don't ever want to come back. And this is a kind of belt and suspenders approach because denervating that area may also help with the pain. And I've only had to use that a couple of times in my practice.
All right. So you said a lot there. So if you do the injection yourself, talk me through how you do it. If you send it to somebody else, tell me how you write that prescription.
So I don't, so for the first, for the radial tunnel diagnostic injection proper, I will not do that injection myself, mainly because it just doesn't work in my clinic workflow. And then also I'm not completely sure that, in some of the, higher BMI patients with a thicker subcutaneous, tissue that I can get there confidently. Now, yes, I can sit there and go through it and make sure until they get a wrist drop, which is how some people describe that you have to do it that way. But I send somebody for through ultrasound guidance because I think that there's a role. They're better at it. They can place it with accuracy. So I'll just send for a diagnostic injection, ultrasound guided for the radial tunnel. And in some cases, if I'm worried, if it's like a recurrent radial tunnel after somebody else has done surgery, if I want it at the distal edge of the supinator, I will say that on the prescription. And I will very specifically say no steroid. Because I don't want steroid added. They may just see ultrasound-guided injection and add steroid because they think that's what we want. But adding steroid adds the possibility of a flare reaction. I recently had that with a patient who had a saphenous injection, and somebody did a diagnostic injection for the saphenous nerve, but also added steroid. Patient got a so-so response, and I think it was because they had a flare reaction. And I sent them back for a no-steroid injection, and they did really well with that temporarily. And then, the last thing is about the diagnostic injection for the tennis elbow, denervation kind of surgery. I will write specifically, lower lateral cutaneous branch coming off of the radial nerve. And I'll call that person. I'll call the person doing the study and be like, here's what I want. Because it is an uncommon kind of request. And I guarantee you most people listening right now are probably saying, what the hell is he doing? So
that's what I'm saying right now. So they're with me. All right. Let's, I knew you would do this. You just brought in all that nerve talk. So let's forget about.
I did it for the people that want the nerve stuff. There's probably one or two other nerve.
There may be.
Well, what do you tell this tennis elbow patient? If say it is purely just tennis elbow or it's a little radial tunnel too.
All right. And I think that is really the most important thing that we can share, whether we have it right or not. Here's what I say. I look forward to what you say. I say, number one, this is an age-related phenomenon. We will all get it. This is a degeneration of the origin of one of your tendons. And for me, therapy, and I agree with you, anti-inflammatories and ice after heavy activities are the key. I will briefly instruct them on what therapy exercises. And again, that's the elbow extended, pronated, wrist flexed, add additional flexion stress with additional external rotation of the shoulder as necessary. But what I really like to do is send them to one visit to therapy and have the therapist work with them, teach them things like only supinated lifting, no lifting of objects with the forearm pronated, but really stress the therapy and the time aspect of things.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I miss about having our therapists in clinic with us during the COVID era is that in some patients, I would just have the therapist go in and show them those exercises. We'd send them out with a brace and then they wouldn't need to go to therapy. There are other patients who just need to spend more time with the therapist, but the therapist in the clinic can help you kind of suss that out and determine, okay, do they need to go upstairs or do they need to just, spend 5 minutes with me here and know the exercises and come back as needed. But I agree with you on that. I have a harder time telling patients that it is age related just because I am a younger surgeon and I also look young for my age. So I think it is a little harder for me to tell some patients that, but I eventually do get to that.
Therapy is just so important. It's interesting that the literature is a little mixed on therapy. I read an article recently that suggested that therapy can be helpful, but that many patients, if you compare those treated with therapy and those treated without, ultimately, the results are similar. That's really not been my experience. So it might be interesting, and we should probably have a therapist join us for a further discussion about
it. Agreed. I think just like it really depends on the lens you're taking, how you want to examine this. You know, some people would say that therapy for thumb CMC makes no difference based on, parameters X, Y, and Z. But I guarantee you that, the amount of time that a therapist spends with a patient going through these exercises, that is important to the patient in a number of ways beyond kind of the physical aspects of it.
Perfect. So I'm going to be very practical. I know you were in clinic and you have a clinic full of patients coming to see you. Here's what I think. No. Oh, God. Sounds
torturous. If you want to come over, you're welcome to.
Thankfully, I'm headed to the OR. Here's what we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about the role of orthoses in combination with therapy. We haven't talked about steroid injections, PRP, autologous blood injections, and we hadn't talked about the role of surgery. I would suggest, if you would consider joining me again for a part two of this
podcast. We have to, now that you just listened to all that, we actually have to talk about things like PRP, but
we have time to read now.
We should do another session on this. Although I think I remember in an earlier episode saying that I never wanted to do an episode on tennis elbow. So now you've gotten me to do two.
Oh my God. The end of the world is coming. You will get through it. We'll talk through it together. All right. Well, I do enjoy talking about this topic. I don't mind seeing these patients because I do think we can help them mainly by education. But sometimes these patients stick around my clinic more for a greater duration than I would like.
I will say, along those lines, I enjoy this patient more than ganglions. Ganglions probably bring me the least joy out of any hand surgery condition. I guess that and the care of athletes, as a prior episode has shown. But yes, this is a hard thing because you do have to tell people that this is going, they ask you how long is it going to take until it goes away. And then you have to look them in the eye and say 4 to 6 months, good luck. But yeah, so we can pick it up next time.
Let's do it again soon. All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for listening. You've made it to the end.
Please keep in touch with us over social media. You can reach us at Hand Podcast on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is @ChrisDMD, and that's spelled D-Y.
And you can contact me at Congenital Hand.
If you need to email us, please do. It's handpodcast@gmail.com.
Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget to leave a review. That helps us get the word out.
Special thanks for the amazing jazz music. It comes from Peter Martin. And remember, keep the upper hand and come back next time.